For NSPR News, I'm Sarah Bohannon. Tens of thousands of people were evacuated this week following the crisis at the Oroville Dam. These people in low-lying areas of Oroville and in communities along the Feather River are still under an evacuation warning. What does that mean? Tonight, we're speaking with officials and residents about the current situation and sharing information that you need to know in the event of another evacuation order. One of those things is having an emergency kit on hand. Today, I talked to CAL FIRE Chief Scott McLean about just what should be in that kit. Thank you for joining me, CAL FIRE Chief Scott McLean. I believe that you said at one of the recent press conferences that all of us who've been affected by the recent emergency situation with the Oroville Dam should be taking this situation as a wake-up call and that we should be prepared with emergency supplies at all times. Can you talk more about that and what folks should have on hand in a supply kit?
Well, in the area that we live here in the foothills of Butte County, we all should be ready to go, especially with the wildland season, as far as the wildfires and whatnot that we've seen come through this area on a regular basis, especially recently in the last couple of years. But in our, you know, we've always recommended that the public be ready with their emergency supply kits or lists and, you know, have an evacuation plan. Which direction are you going to go in to leave efficiently and quickly and safely, of course, to get out of harm's way? Make sure you have some water with you. Bring about a gallon or so of water for each person if you can. You need to stay hydrated because you may not be able to get back home right away, of course. We say also a three-day supply of food if you can package something that up. And I understand that that's during the wildland season as far as wildfire season. But, you know, at any time we should be ready in these instances around here. A couple changes of clothes or get to these products quick enough that you can put them into your car. Personal hygiene items such as, you know, toothbrush, toothpaste, combs and whatnot make a pretty big difference. Medication, get those prescriptions. Make copies of your prescriptions and have them with you so you can go to the drugstores if you have been evacuated. Keep your meds consistent or your medicines consistent. You want to make sure that you do that. Bring spare eyeglasses. Right now I've got about a half a dozen glasses around in my truck that I keep losing. So make sure you have those visual aids. You know, it sounds simple, but it makes a big difference in the end run. Pets. What about the small pets? You know, make sure you have the items for those as far as food and whatnot, as far as taking care of your small pets, your cats and your dogs. So you got to think about those as well. Have some copies of your insurance company name, your copies of your insurance policy, your birth certificates if you can, your deeds. I mean, I know we're getting into it a little bit, but what I'm trying to get across is those important documents that you need in case something does happen. Make sure you bring your identification. The reason I'm bringing that up is if, in this case, let's say they had an area, and it's not taking place as we speak, but in the wildfire period of time, we usually let residents back into those areas that have been evacuated first before anybody else. You need to have your license that has your correct address on it. Now, if you don't have an address, a current address on your driver's license, just throw an old bill with an address on it with your name on it showing the new address. And put it in your glove box for now. It'll help you get back into those roadblocks when necessary. And, you know, I'll finish up with bring some cash, small denominations, your cell phone chargers, your computer chargers, whether they be 110 residential or 12-volt out of your car. You know, we can go on and on. It's just those little things that are particular to you. Just make sure you can grab them quickly and throw them in the car as you leave.
Another one is gas in your car, seems like.
Oh, yes.
Very important.
That does help. I mean, you know, it was definitely interesting on this recent evacuation where people, you know, the amount of people, the volume of people overwhelmed the gas stations. So, yeah, try to have, you know, a good three-quarters of a tank of gas in your car at all times, if possible, and if that's feasible for you. I live in Chico, and driving home, Thursday night of last week, you know, there's a good half dozen cars or more alongside Highway 70 and 99. Didn't appear to have any damage, but they're off the side of the road. They might have run out of gas. So it's just one of those things to, you know, be prepared in that type of thing.
And I just wanted to reiterate that right now people in Oroville and surrounding areas downstream are on an evacuation warning. Is that correct?
Correct. Evacuation order is when you have to, you know, you are requested to leave your property or your residence. That has been downgraded now to an evacuation warning, and that's a situation which you need to pay attention to your local media, have a radio going, whatever you feel comfortable with, in case something does change. And that goes for any situation, any emergency.
Are there any other ways, like if an alert is issued, let's say that there is an instance that arises and an evacuation order is put back in place, where will people receive those alerts? Is there a direct way for them to receive alerts?
Right. If you go onto the Butte County Sheriff's webpage, they can instruct you on how to get, I actually have it on my cell phone. You can get text messages apprising you of certain situations. Yes, very good point. Keep an eye on the local news entities around this area as well.
What about where people should go if that were to happen again? Are there places that are still set up? Do you know about that?
The information will be gotten out as far as which direction to head in, depending on the emergency and where it's located, of course. And follow and heed those directions, if you would, please, from the local law enforcement. I know Silver Dollar Fair is one of the major ones. I know there's several evacuation centers in Chico, but at this point in time, I believe Silver Dollar Fair is the only one that's open at this time.
I think a lot of people were really caught off guard, when they got that hour evacuation notice. I'm wondering, what would it take for another mandatory evacuation to be ordered? Like, would it be a certain lake level, a certain amount of erosion? Like, is there anything that people can really keep their eyes out for before they have to wait for that alert if it were to come?
It's hard to determine. The sheriff on the original was given the information, and he made a call, which was a very good call, in reference to getting folks to start evacuating immediately. So as things develop, the public will be notified.
And then is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Just heed the warnings. Right now, the public has been let back into their residence and their businesses and hopefully to resume their lives again. And we understand that is very disruptive when people are evacuated from certain areas, and we want to get those folks back in a reasonable amount of time. That's always our concern, to make sure we take care of those folks that evacuated. As far as safety, we've been discussing turn around, don't drown. Just yesterday, another rescue, and I think as I was coming to work this morning, I heard on the radio another rescue, Swiftwater Rescue, was taking place because individuals don't heed the warning signs, go around the barricades, and go into the water that's going across the roadway. It only takes 6 inches of water, flowing water, to knock you off your feet. It takes only a foot to 2 feet of flowing water to start moving a car downstream or any vehicle for that matter. So we ask those out there to heed the warnings. Do not drive into a body of water that's going across the roadways, but turn around. And again, don't drown.
Okay, thank you very much. That was CAL FIRE Chief Scott McClain talking about what should be in an evacuation emergency kit. You can get a full list of what to include on our website, mynspr.org, as well as where you can sign up for emergency alerts in every North State County. Again, that's at mynspr.org. Hundreds of thousands of people returned home after those mandatory evacuations were lifted, but not everyone decided to go back. NSPR special correspondent Adia White has more on why some chose to stay at evacuation shelters instead of going home.
Even though mandatory evacuations have been lifted for those in the Oroville area, there's still around 350 people staying at the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds Red Cross shelter in Chico. They're ready to go home, but still don't trust that the area is safe.
I live below the dam, really close, probably less than 3 miles, so it would be dumb of me to be somewhere just in case something happens. I would have no chance of getting out. I'm not going to put myself at that risk or my family.
That's Tina Hansen. When she first got the notice to evacuate on Sunday, her daughter was working as an aide to an elderly woman in a wheelchair. She went to go help her daughter and the woman evacuate, but they weren't able to take her with them. By the time they got through to the sheriff to ask for help, several hours had passed. If the emergency spillway had failed in that time, they would have all been in the path of the floodwater. Tina says she wouldn't want to risk something like that happening again.
The moment the rain actually hits, I won't know part of Oroville until I know for sure that either A, the rain has surpassed, or B, they've fixed what needs to be fixed, and I don't think filling it full of rocks is a solution.
But others chose to stay at the fairgrounds for more complicated reasons. Steve Hall is a homeless veteran, and he was living in an abandoned house in Oroville when a bus came through the town to evacuate people. It took him to the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds, but now that he's here, he's not sure how to get back, or even if he wants to.
I'm kind of stuck. I don't have any transportation. I kind of want to get back because I'm worried about my things, but at the same time, I think my life's a little more important.
There are a significant number of homeless people at the fairgrounds now, but Red Cross officials say there are still more people who have homes to return to but are afraid to go back. The officials worry that the community won't be as supportive if the fairgrounds are seen as a homeless shelter, even though many of the homeless are evacuees from Oroville, too. I'm Addia White for North State Public Radio.
Officials with the Department of Water Resources are engaged in a monumental effort, with crews working around the clock on various ways to strengthen the structure while draining enough water to accommodate runoff from incoming storms and possibly record spring runoff. Joining us now on the program is Chris Orak. He's a spokesman for the California Department of Water Resources. Good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you?
I was wondering if you might be able to explain or describe the situation as it currently exists right now.
Sure. We're in the process of reinforcing the emergency spillway with large boulders, rock, and other material, and then sealing that in with a slurry mixture of concrete so that the erosion is contained and hopefully no further erosion happens in the areas that eroded during the activation of the spillway.
Obviously, the big concern has been how well those spillways, both the main spillway and the emergency spillway, are holding up. What are the warning signs? What would you see if those things started to fail?
Well, we have monitors out there, both our cameras. We're flying drones during the day and people looking at it. The main spillway, the one that had the initial erosion, is actually holding up very well. We have not seen any additional erosion since Saturday on that spillway. Even when we increased the flow up to 100,000 CFS, there's no erosion moving up or down the cement structure. Now, there's still a little bit of erosion on the edges because the sides of it were blown out and you have some water going out into the sides of the area that never had concrete on it. But for the most part, it's gone down to solid bedrock. And that was the case for the spillway. Of why it was built there is because it was built on solid bedrock. So once we reached down to solid bedrock and all the dirt was washed away, now we're seeing clean water come out of there with, like I said, no further erosion. On the emergency spillway, that is only used when the lake level reaches 901 feet. So it's an automatic process. It's not done by gates or anything like that, like the main spillway. When the lake reaches above 901 feet, the water starts flowing over a cement weir down a barren hillside into the collecting pool below. And what happened there is it's never been used before. It was built in 1968. And when the water started flowing down there, it started having some erosion that built back up towards the cement weir. And that's what caused our unified command here, which is the Butte County Sheriff, the director of DWR and CAL FIRE, to issue the evacuation warnings.
In one of the aerial photographs that was published by the Sacramento Bee, the erosion towards the emergency spillway looked rather close, less than the width of the roadway that had been washed away. How many feet was that? About 25, 30 feet away from the concrete escarpment? And what would occur if that erosion reached to that escarpment and underneath it?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how far it got close to the top of the cement weir to the spillway. I do know it was about 30 feet deep. What would have happened is if it would have continued up at the rate it was, and it would have it had the ability to undermine the cement weir there. And at that point of the cement weir, it's 30 feet tall. So the cement weir goes from anywhere from 85 feet tall to 1 foot tall over the 1,700 feet that it is long. There's a possibility if it had reached up to the top of there, it could have eroded the ground underneath the cement weir and caused the collapse of that, which would have allowed the 30 feet below that point to come flowing through. And water is a very destructive force. So if that would have happened, it's very possible that it could have continued to erode along the whole weir up to that point that's 85 feet tall and allowing the water to flow uncontrollably down into the valley below and most likely flooding the lower parts of the city of Oroville and areas down below. That's why when we saw the erosion starting to happen, we saw the effects it was having and how it was moving up towards the top of the weir, the decision was made to evacuate the residents. It's important to know that the emergency spillway is no longer active. Within about 4 or 5 hours of us noticing the erosion and increasing the outflow of the primary spillway from 55,000 cubic feet per second to 100,000 cubic feet per second, we were able to lower the lake level below the 901-foot mark, and no water was continuing to flow into the area below the cement weir on the emergency spillway. So that took the pressure off of the emergency spillway as far as having water run down it, causing additional erosion. We, since Saturday, we have not seen any additional erosion to the primary spillway. It hasn't moved up or back. There's been some erosion out to the sides where the sides of it blew out, and there's still some earth. But that spillway was put there for a specific reason, and that's because it's on it's on bedrock. So once it flushed out the dirt that was underneath it and got down to bedrock, it's running pretty solid. It's running pretty clean. And we're seeing no further erosion up or down on it.
We're speaking with Chris Orok. He's a spokesman for the Department of Water Resources. As this crisis is unfolded, there have been various statements, and I know the DWR is in a very difficult spot, not wanting to create panic. Initially, it was said that the damage to spillways is typical in a dam and in a releasal event. It was said that the main spillway could handle the flow. It was said that the dam would not reach the emergency spillway. It was said that the damage was minor. It was said that the emergency spillway would function as designed. You know, people were told that everything was safe, and suddenly there was a one-hour warning to get out, that there could be a complete structural failure. But that was never really explained what that would entail and potentially how bad the situation could get. Can you address any of the, you know, credibility issues? People today are a little bit unsure of what to think.
Well, you know, a couple things. The dam itself has never been threatened. There's no erosion near the dam. The dam structure is and continues to be not in any threat.
But if the main spillway were to fail and the gates were to get eroded and washed out, you'd have a tremendous amount of water flowing uncontrolled over that area. Wouldn't that migrate, or couldn't that migrate towards the main dam? Or, and even if it didn't, how much water would drain off of it?
Well, I'm not going to get into hypotheticals. I know that the emergency weir will activate, and we're hoping that if we have to use it, which we don't think we're going to have to use it, that the reinforcements that we've put there will help mitigate some of the erosion. But, you know, we're going to caution on the side of public safety.
In the future, if there were some hiccup or some issue that started to turn into significant trouble, how much lead time would people have to evacuate next time?
Well, I can't say for sure on every given instance, but we do have people out there constantly monitoring both the primary spillway and the areas around the emergency spillway. We're flying drones every day. We have workers out there, but we have other people out there that are just monitoring it for any type of further erosion that could lead to something. And once again, you know, as the sheriff said when he lifted the evacuation order and turned it into an evacuation warning, we're not out of the woods just yet. You need to stay vigilant. We are confident that the worst is behind us, and he made the decision to move forward and have the and let the citizens return home.
Now the evacuations are optional; they're not mandatory. But would you be sleeping down below in the?
I am.
So you're spending the night tonight.
I've been up here nonstop for the last. Since Sunday, and I have a room at the Holiday Inn Express in downtown Oroville.
Chris Orok, spokesman for the Department of Water Resources, thank you so much for joining us today on the special coverage, and best of luck to you and everyone there.
Thank you.
For an outside perspective on the repairs and what risks remain, we turn to Dr. Jay Lund. He's on the editorial board of several water resources publications, has been a member of the advisory committee for updates to the state's water plan. Joining us now on our special coverage is Dr. Jay Lund. He's the director of the Center for Watershed Sciences and a professor of civil and environmental engineering at UC Davis. Welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
How are you viewing the current emergency repairs underway at Lake Oroville and the attempts to control the lake level?
Well, I think overall they're doing the right thing. They've had troubles with all of the outlets now for Lake Oroville. At first, they had had a big hole develop in the primary flood control spillway. They stopped use of it. They had a little bit of reservoir space to have it fill up at that time, and they inspected that, and then they realized that they would need to use that structure for the rest of this still several months of the flood season. And so they fairly responsibly, I think, tried to up that release rate to about 50,000. And in the course of that, the forecasts for inflows turned out to be a little bit under what the actual inflows were. And so on Saturday, the emergency spillway had the first flow over it in the history of the dam, and some erosion was detected from that. They immediately increased the outflow on the primary spillway, sort of going above a little bit above where they had previously been comfortable, to bring the water down on the emergency spillway and to end the erosion. And they were concerned enough about the safety of that emergency spillway that they evacuated 188,000 people downstream, which was probably a prudent thing to do, certainly when you're looking at that kind of water and that number of people downstream, you want to act with some prudence, and they did that. Their goal following that has been to keep the outflows from the reservoir in the damaged primary spillway at 100,000 cubic feet per second for as long as it takes for them to get down to 50 foot below the rim of the emergency spillway, which is put them in near the normal flood control operations, and that will give them quite a lot more flexibility to handle some fair sized storms coming in over the rest of the winter.
As the story initially, as events started to get out of control, officials were very reassuring, and they're trying to be very calming. They said erosion or damage to a spillway is a normal occurrence, that there's no concern that if the lake level does rise, which it won't, and reach the emergency spillway, that the emergency spillway is designed to handle a tremendous amount of water, and that they had all confidence that it would handle it. And within 24 hours, they had to go back to the regular spillway. Currently, they're saying that the lake level won't rise, that they've been very successful at maintaining and reducing the lake's level, and that the lake level won't rise to the emergency spillway again. Yet at the same time, they're furiously making repairs to the emergency spillway that they're saying that they won't need to be used under any condition, that they won't have to use it. So do you have any doubts, or is, I think some people
I think
in the public...
I think they're being prudent. I mean, the last thing you want is to panic people. I think they've been... the press conferences I've marveled at, where they have the engineers from the Department of Water Resources talking about the technical side, and then they always have the county sheriff and the police officials there about how they're preparing for the worst. So I think it's been fairly balanced. Now they've been caught with a few things they didn't expect, but it doesn't come out all right, but it could be a lot worse if they hadn't kept some reserve comfort on the primary spillway, and they'd gotten into a position where they had to use the emergency spillway, didn't have any ability to back off. We might be looking at a very different situation now than what we have seen. So I think things could have gone much worse. I think everybody understands with a big dam and a damaged spillway during a flood season that there's a potential for some true devastation, but I think they've handled it overall pretty responsibly, getting people evacuated with enough notice so that if things had gone horribly wrong, that almost everyone would have been out of harm's way. it's a messy situation. We often think that the flood control infrastructure is perfect, and it never can be. When you look at the immense force of nature that these floods are, it's not unusual to have some kind of problem. But that doesn't mean you want to cause people to panic. So you're always trying to balance between, you know, what reasonable concern and not having folks panic. And given a large population, I think it's a very difficult position to be in.
The Department of Water Resources has maintained that there's never been a threat to the actual structure of the dam. However, there have been concerns that the escarpment or the lip of the emergency spillway could fail, and one would suppose the potential as well for the main spillway to erode back to the gates and have that structure fail. Wouldn't either of those failures begin a chain of cascading and uncontrollable events that could lead to a structural failure of the dam itself or a structural failure of either or both of those spillways, since they're pretty right. much adjacent to one another?
I think the concern would be more for the failure of the spillways and having erosion at the spillways. It looks like a whole hill between the earth-fill dam and the spillways. Right now, my biggest concerns for worst case is if they had a very, very large flood come in, sort of on the scale of 1997, that they would have to use the emergency spillway, especially in combination where you might have head cutting up the primary spillway that would force them to cut back. Then you would have to use the emergency spillway. And in that case, I would imagine that they might well evacuate everyone downstream, because it's going to depend on, well, just how competent is that rock that's underneath that concrete lip on the emergency spillway.
And what quantity of water are we talking about if there is a structural failure of the emergency or the main spillway?
I think if you're looking at the emergency spillway, it 450,000 acre feet of water. There's different calculations you could do of how fast that water would drain out, and it depends a lot on how wide that breach would be.
And the channels in the Feather River downstream heading towards Marysville, Yuba City, and elsewhere, those are rated to be able to hold about 150,000 cubic feet per second.
My understanding.
So this would overtop or perhaps breach those levees.
That's right. So you would want to evacuate. If you thought there was a risk of losing the emergency spillway, and apparently there is, you would want to evacuate people downstream. And that's what they did on Sunday night.
How close were we to disaster earlier this week, and how close are we today?
You know, we might never know. You know, it might be that there's a very competent layer of bedrock underneath that spillway, and that even if it had continued to erode, it would not have caused the collapse of the spillway. But I don't think we want to test that hypothesis, and I think that's what they decided they didn't want to test, that erosion was much more than they expected, and even at a modest flow rate. And then they didn't need to assign a probability. It was a significant enough probability that you want to get people out of the way.
What would be the warning signs of imminent failure, and how much lead time would the authorities have, and how much lead time would people have to get out of the way?
It'll vary how far downriver you are. I think it's several hour travel time, at least down to Marysville. Oroville is quite a bit closer. It's going to be a long 2 or 3 months. Not only do we have to have 2 more months left in the rainy season, but there's also a lot of snowpack up there that's going to have to either be stored in that reservoir or passed on through those spillways. So I think people should be prepared to pay attention to this for 3 months or so. It's going to be pretty dicey. There's a lot of people, a lot of really good people working on this, but sometimes bad things happen, and it's already a mess, and hopefully it'll be contained. The whole country, and I think certainly all of California, is going to be paying a lot more attention to spillway maintenance and spillway design and spillway construction and other aspects of the flood system, as they should.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Dr. Jay Lund, director of the Center for Watershed Sciences. He's a professor of civil and environmental engineering at UC Davis. As you heard, while the immediacy of the danger has eased, concern and risk remain. We at North State Public Radio will continue to keep you informed. On behalf of Sarah Bohannon, Audia White, and Casey Gardner, I'm Mark Albert. You're listening to North State Public Radio. We're KCHO Chico and KFPR Reading. It's 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for Fresh Air.